Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani on IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show lined up for you today. Frederique Keller will be joining me on, and she is a licensed acupuncturist and beekeeper. And I have so much to ask her as a new beekeeper myself. But before I do that, I want to share with you some of the things going on in and around the New York area and the country, and also share a little bit of some of the stuff going on in my world. We've had a very, very busy week. It seems like I got back from India and I just landed full force running with so many things to do and trying to keep that equanimity and balance that I found while I was in India here in the States is really a challenge. This weekend, I hosted a sixth grade class here at my home, and we cooked food for a couple hundred people who are in our community, a couple towns over, that are struggling to make ends meet and have little access to really good, healthy produce. And so we participated in Food Not Bombs food distribution, and the kids and parents first came to my house, and we cooked up some food for a couple hundred people and made a couple hundred peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and then joined them in Hempstead, where they had collected and recovered food that was going to end up in a landfill from stores like Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, beautiful, organic, fresh-looking, beautiful vegetables that they were able to distribute. And all of the volunteers that I brought with me helped. And it is such a wonderful learning experience for these kids who grow up in a little bubble of, you know, having all their needs met, seeing how appreciative and how different it is for some people that live in just a community over. And so it was really nice. And this past weekend also I had gone to the synagogue on Friday night because it was my father's Yorksite, the anniversary of his passing. And there was a young girl who was going to get bat mitzvah the next day, who is one of the routines when people get bat mitzvah in our synagogue. They have to do a bat mitzvah project, some sort of community service for the year. And it turns out her community service for the past year had been working with Food Not Bombs, that she was so moved by her experience the year before working with me and Food Not Bombs that became her bat mitzvah project. And when I heard that, I felt like, wow, the work I'm doing with these kids is not just a one-shot deal, that for many of them it really affects them and catapults them on a lifelong path of wanting to do better and know that the food system we have is not working, and you know, how they can get involved, and hopefully as they become young adults and adults, that becomes their life work, that they really know that the food system needs to be equalized and that everybody has the right to have access to good, healthy, fresh food. And so that was what we did Sunday. And then Tuesday we celebrated Farm to School Month at a local nursery school as part of Slow Food Huntington's work in, Slow Food in schools. Myself and Devin went to Work of Heart, a little cute little nursery school that we service about four times a year. And we made applesauce for the kids and talked about the apple picking and harvesting and how apples are grown. And it was really fun. So all these things that we do out in the world really rejuvenate me and are just such wonderful things. This coming weekend, I will be hosting a brunch at the Waldorf School in Garden City on Sunday, November 3rd. And this is an opportunity for people to learn about foods that they can make in the morning quickly before their kids go off to school. I know so many parents struggle with what to feed their kids in the morning, and so we're going to do quick buckwheat crepes, we're going to do egg and cheese burritos, and also vegan and gluten-free burritos. One of the things that's also a challenge, of course, is accommodating and altering your foods to accommodate all the different food allergies and needs of different people. But it can easily be done, and it's not something that is so challenging. You just need to know about it. And once you do, it's just like preparing anything else. So that's this Sunday at the Waldorf School in Garden City, starting at 10 o'clock. I think there's still a little space if you want to get in on that. Then in the afternoon, there's a wonderful biodynamic workshop out at KK's farm in Southold. It's called The Farm. And that's in Southold, New York, on the East End, and from 3 to 5 o'clock. And actually, I need to check the time. I actually think it might start at 2 o'clock. But that's supposed to be a wonderful workshop. KK will show you how to put your garden to sleep for the winter, some of the preparations, the biodynamic preparations that you can apply to the land and to your compost before the winter starts. So that's wonderful. November 3rd through 10th is Long Island Restaurant Week. And one of my new favorite restaurants, West East Bistro in Hicksville, they are actually having on Friday evening a Diwali feast, a vegetarian Indian feast with live music next Friday, not this Friday, a week from Friday. If you want to buy tickets to that, I'm going to try to buy tickets to that. It sounds really fun. November 6th are two wonderful things going on here. One, Slow Food Huntington, in partnership with Island Harvest and the Cinema Arts Center, we are co-sponsoring the film A Place at the Table, which is Jeff Bridges' new documentary about hunger in America. And it is a great film, and I hope you guys can come out for that. It starts at 7:30 at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. And yet before that, and I, of course, am going to try to do both, November 6th, Edible Long Island is having their launch party. And yes, it is true. We finally have an Edible Long Island. The Edible magazines have decided that we have enough places that would qualify for the Edible Seal of Approval, meaning that it's sustainable and local and committed to the good food movement. So Edible Long Island now has their own magazine, and I'm really thrilled. It goes between the Edible East End and Edible Brooklyn, Edible Manhattan, and now we have Edible Long Island. So that's 5:30 to 8 at the Jewel Restaurant in Melville, which is only about 10, 15 minutes away from the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. So it is possible to actually go to the launch party at 5:30 and scoot over to the film by 7:30. Also, November 13th is a really important thing going on here, right out on Long Island at Stony Brook University's Wang Center. It's the Offshore Wind and Power Conference for New York. And this is sponsored by the Sierra Club and other government industry leaders for offshore wind power for New York. And this is a really important topic, and one that I hope many of you are interested in and would consider coming to. I'm going to try to make it. It should be very informative. I know we've been trying to get offshore wind and power going out at the east end of Long Island. I know they've been trying to do it off of Cape Cod. And there's so many people that are fighting it, and yet there are countries. I know Germany is running so much of their country on energy from wind, and we could be doing the same. So if you can make it to that conference, it should be great, November 13th. November 14th, Slow Food Huntington is having their monthly meeting, talking about everything slow and what we can do as a chapter to further the movement and bring people along in the good food movement. So if you can come down November 14th and add some energy to that, we'd love to have you. Also, Grassroots Environmental Education Center, which is a nonprofit organization very close to my heart right here in Port Washington, is having their annual fundraiser in Rye, New York, at the Wainwright House. So if you can go to that, of course, if you go to that, you can't make it to our meeting, which is unfortunate because I'd like to be at both. But that's their annual fundraiser, and if you can get to them in Rye, New York, and support them, that would be wonderful. Also, November 19th, Gasland 2 is having a screening at the Unitarian Church on Shelter Rock Road in Manhasset. And that is a wonderful film about the fracking industry and how it is polluting our waters and the destruction. So there's actually on my website this week, there's a take action that you can do to, excuse me, to let Governor Cuomo know that you do not want him to lift the ban on fracking. It's that time of year. There has been a ban on fracking in New York, and the time for it to expire is coming up, and we need to let Governor Cuomo know that we do not want that to happen. Another thing to sign up for on my website is to tell the FDA not to impose the laws on small, local, sustainable farms that they're trying to do for the big agri-farms. What the kind of rules and regulations that we need on the big farms don't apply necessarily to the smaller farms, and the cost involved in being compliant to some of these laws will put the small farmers out of business. So please take a look at that on my website as well. And also in the news, and it's very appropriate with my guest today, Frederick Keller, who is a beekeeper, there's been new links to the neocotinoids in creating a virus for the bees and lowering their immune system. And it's a really interesting study that took place. Where did it take place? I'm not remembering where it took place, but it's a new study linking the neocotinoids to the bee virus, and all of Europe has put a ban on neocotinoids so that the bees have a chance to come back, and we're hoping that our country will follow suit. So we need all of you to get involved in that. So now I'd like to share a recipe with you before I invite on Frederick. I was inspired by a falafel recipe that came out this week in the New York Times, and I realized I hadn't made falafel in so long. So I used that recipe kind of as my inspiration, as a guide, but I made a few changes to the recipe that I think just helped the falafel hold together a little bit better. So this is my falafel with tahini sauce recipe. And it's amazing how easy it is, and it's amazing that I haven't made it more often. You first want to start with 2 cups of chickpeas, and you soak them overnight for 24 hours. So you do need to plan. I actually know that I have in the past also made falafels using canned chickpeas, but the consistency is not quite the same. So it's better to just soak them, and then you don't cook them. You, of course, fry them, but you make the batter just straight from soaking. So 2 cups of dried chickpeas soaked for 24 hours, 5 cloves of garlic, 1 onion chopped, 1 1/4 teaspoons of ground coriander, 4 teaspoons of cumin, 1 1/4 teaspoon of cayenne or more if you like your falafel a little spicier, 1 1/2 teaspoon salt, 1/2 teaspoon of white pepper, 3/4 teaspoon baking powder, 4 teaspoons of lemon juice, 1 tablespoon of chickpea flour. And that's what I added that really helped hold the falafel balls together. And you can even add 2 tablespoons if you would like yours to hold together a little more. 2 tablespoons water, 2 cups of safflower oil, and 2 cups of olive oil. And so basically you're going to soak the chickpeas for 24 hours and then drain them. And then we're going to transfer, after the 24 hours, the drained chickpeas into the food processor along with all of the other ingredients except for the oil. And you're going to pulse that in the food processor until it's really well chopped. You don't want it to be a smooth puree, but you do want it to be completely chopped together so it looks like a batter that you can form into balls. Scrape down the sides and pulse again. And you can actually taste the mixture raw if you'd like. And if you would like to add a little more salt, you can. I usually fry one ball up and taste that one ball and then decide whether I want to add any more spices. So you're going to put the oil into a saucepan. If you use one that has higher sides, you'll keep a lot of the splattering to a minimum. If you do it in a frying pan, a lot more oil splattering out, and you run the risk of being burned. So using a pan with high sides is good, but I don't use one that's too wide. I'd rather do small batches and not use too much oil, because you need the oil to be at least like an inch and a half, 2 inches deep. And you can reuse this oil by straining it back into the bottle after it's cooled down. Just put it through a strainer so you take out any of the particles of food. And you can save that oil in the refrigerator and use it over and over again for, you know, similar type of food. So you're going to put the oil into the pot and turn the heat on to medium-high. And you can see the when the oil starts to look shimmery on the top, then it's hot enough, and you can drop one ball in it. And you should be able, the ball should instantly start sizzling. Then you know the oil's hot enough. If it just falls to the bottom and doesn't sizzle, it's not hot enough. And then just wait a little bit longer. And you're going to put in like 6 balls at a time and fry them up and then take them out when they're all golden brown. And then for the tahini sauce, you can need 1/4 cup of tahini, 1/2 cup of water, 2 cloves of garlic, 1 tablespoon tamari, 1 tablespoon of aji marin, which is a sweet rice wine, 1 teaspoon of dark sesame oil, 1/4 teaspoon of hot sesame oil, which is optional, some parsley, and a slice of ginger, about the size of 1/4. And you just pulse that in the food processor, and you can use a little mini food processor for that if you have one, just to whip up the sauce. And that is it. Super easy, very delicious. I serve them as an appetizer with toothpicks, which was a lot of fun. So I made the balls, you know, really small, bite-sized balls. If you're making a sandwich, of course, you can make them easy, larger. You can also make them flattened. Instead of full balls, you can flatten them out so that they're easier to put between pita bread if you're putting them into a sandwich. And that is my recipe for you. Enjoy it. And now it's my pleasure to introduce Frédérique Keller to all of you. She is a licensed acupuncturist. She's an herbologist, and she has a private practice that also incorporates not only classical homeopathy, but bee venom therapy. As a beekeeper, she's really so knowledgeable about the magic of bees and their honey, their pollen, their propolis, the royal jelly, and bee bread. And, you know, she knows when to use these different modalities to help people in their health journey. So we'll talk to her about that. She's also the current president of the American Apitherapy. Thank mm-hmm. you. Apitherapy Society. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to educating about and promoting the use of products for the hive for health and healing. Frédérique also works in another office specializing in sports and spinal injuries, and she's also teaching people about cooking healthy food. And you've been a beekeeper for how long, Frédérique? 20 years?
It's actually, I was thinking last night, 24 years.
24 years. Well,
my
welcome.
Husband decided to become a beekeeper.
And thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. And so, it is magic indeed.
It is. So what is apitherapy, now that I can say it?
The definition of apitherapy is the medicinal use of all the products of the beehive, because all the products exist in synergy inside the hive, so they have the same effect for us as human beings. So we're talking about the raw honey, pollen, propolis, royal jelly, bee venom, beeswax, and drone larva, which is interesting and not many people know about in the United States. It's widely used in Europe and in Asia as one of the hive products.
Wow, drone larva. Never even heard of it. You're right.
Right. And that's used for men's health issues and also women's health issues for the immune system. And you would just pop them right into your mouth and eat them straight out
wow.
of the hive.
Wow.
Or you can put them in a jar of honey as well if you want to preserve them longer.
Mm-hmm. And what would you use that for?
For women's and men's health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And for your immune system in general.
Wow.
As a kind of tonic.
Uh-huh. So I know people always talk about raw honey and organic honey. Can honey really be organic if you don't really know where the bees are flying?
No, that is a fallacy. There really is no organic honey because, as you know, as a beginning beekeeper, bees fly 3 to 6 miles to get their nectar.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be organic, your neighbors could be, or even your community neighborhood could be, quote, organic, but we don't live in an organic world anymore. So if the bees fly to a farm that's using pesticide, okay, so now it's not organic anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot control where the bees fly, obviously.
Right. So right. What's the best people can do? If they buy local honey and they know their area is...
Yeah, know your area and definitely know your beekeeper, because amongst beekeepers, what people don't know also is that there's two different factions. So you have your commercial beekeepers, which are your pollinators, and they have thousands of hives usually, and they move the bees from place to place to pollinate the crops. And then you have your hobby beekeepers, which is like myself and most of the people on Long Island, and that's usually 100 hives or less, usually from 2 to 100. They're calling us the serious sideliners now,
mm-hmm.
with the Eastern Apiculture Society, which is a, kind of a nice name for it. And we tend to be more into preserving the bees, the health of the bees, and the quality of the products that come out of the hive. Commercial beekeepers really don't concern themselves at all with the products of the hive. Medicinally, which was very shocking to me in the beginning, and
right,
now,
they're using the bees just as pollinators.
Right,
and
so some of them even throw out the honey, and they certainly don't collect propolis or pollen or the other products of the hive to
wow,
use medicinally.
Throw the honey out.
Some of them just because there's no money in honey per pound. They can get more per hive to move it to pollinate than they can get for a pound of honey, you know, wholesale.
Uh-huh.
So it's not interesting for them to make money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a big difference. Raw honey is honey that comes straight out of the hive that the beekeeper has done nothing to, okay, and is very either not filtered or just lightly filtered to get out, you know, some of the residual legs and unpalatable pieces that may end up in the honey. So some people at the market want like the really dirty honey. If you saw what the really dirty honey looked like, it would turn off some people because there are bee parts in it.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
So the raw honey is at the temperature that it came out of the hive, so which is about 93.5. Now, the other beekeepers who are more commercial beekeepers, and the National Honey Association says that heating honey up to a certain degree does not damage the honey. I don't believe that. I think any time you change the nature of what it was originally intended to be as, so kind of like the slow food thing, just leave it alone. Don't apply heat. Once you apply any heat, you change the nature, and you start breaking down the enzymes, the vitamins, the minerals, and so on. So the big debate is at what temperature? I say at no temperature, just leave it alone.
Mm-hmm. But you know, you can filter raw honey as well, so that you remove
yes, and it's
wax
done through
and
a wire kind of grid that roughly filters. That's how we do it. Other people will filter it more and more, but the more you filter it, the more you take out the traces of the pollen, which are so beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And which is why honey is so good for seasonal allergies.
So, what are some of the healing properties, and how do you use it for allergies?
Well, the raw honey with the traces of pollen is really good to build your immune system. So a lot of people think, okay, because of the pollen alone, it does that, but it's because of actual honey itself. And unless you know what specific allergen you're allergic to, having the pollen in there really just generally enhances your immune system. So it's not specific to your particular allergen, because most people don't know what they're allergic to. So it's more of a sense of well-being and immune system strengthening that the honey has, the raw honey has.
Mm-hmm. Do you know why they say not to give raw honey to babies under the age of a year?
I don't adhere to that because I was raised having honey right away, raw honey. And I do know it was a lawsuit that was initiated in the Pacific Northwest, I believe, that a baby got botulism from raw honey. And I just think the circumstances of the case were completely suspicious and had really nothing to do with raw honey at all. But that's my opinion, and if somebody asked me, I would not hesitate in giving raw honey to a child, personally.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to adhere to the one-year rule, okay, fine, but I think it would only strengthen the immune system. And they also say that with an infant, the digestive system is not completely advanced enough to handle the enzymes and the bacteria, the natural bacteria that's in raw honey, but I think that's not true either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think so much of our medicine is fear-based.
It's fear-based, and it keeps you sicker.
Right.
So you have to be really strong in your beliefs and not have fear of doing what you want to do.
Right. Well, I know that I certainly gave my kids honey for a year. I didn't follow any of the things.
And actually, honey, raw honey, most people don't know that it contains traces of hydrogen peroxide, which is what makes it antibacterial, antiseptic, good for wounds. Okay?
Hmm.
And we used to use hydrogen peroxide years ago to sterilize things, and it's kind of gone out of vogue, but that's what honey contains, hydrogen peroxide.
It's just naturally made by the bees?
The bees don't make it. Actually, it's a bi-component of the raw honey itself.
Hmm.
Okay, so it's like a slight fermentation action that happens. And, by the way, raw honey is the only food on the planet that never goes bad.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
It is. It never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah. I mean, it can just last forever. I mean, it might crystallize. It might change its form a little bit, but
That's right.
No mold or bacteria can grow on
honey. And if it crystallizes, that's an indication that you do truly have raw honey. So most honey in stores, like the larger stores, is not real honey anyway. It's glucose or corn syrup. It's mixed.
Although I know, because I've, you know, before I knew as much as I know now, I did used to buy the big things of honey from Costco when I was doing a lot of cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And if you let that sit around, it certainly crystallizes, so maybe that means it wasn't so bad after all. I mean, I know that honey changes, you know, like by the end of the bottle, you know, I'm having to put it in warm water to try to uncrystallize it to get it out of the jar.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing.
No, good.
Yeah, it's a really good thing. Just don't put it in the microwave.
Of course not. No.
No, I have people tell me, oh, I microwaved your honey in the springtime as it was crystallized, as it had crystallized over the winter. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you just killed it.
Right, right.
Yeah, honey
especially
is a raw food.
Especially if it's in a plastic bottle. God. So, well, what is propolis now?
Now, propolis, the Latin word is, it means before the city. So as protection for the hive. So what the bees do is they fly out to the trees and they get the resin and they bring it back to the hive and seal up any nook and cranny, crevice that light comes in into the hive and seal it up so that the whole hive is antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal, so nothing, no pests or bacteria or anything can thrive in the hive. That's what propolis is. Now, in the city areas, the bees will also collect whatever they can. If there's no trees, they will go after tar, for instance, which is not a good thing for us for consumption. So you have to also know where your propolis and where your beekeeper has the hives so that you know that the propolis is actual propolis from the resin of trees and not something else.
Well, what about the beekeepers that have their bees like down in Brooklyn Navy Yard, you know, at Brooklyn Grange? And
yes, well, I haven't examined, you know, their propolis, but I would imagine that if there's enough flora around, if they're the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens and all that, the bees are getting regular propolis. But I would have to say, like, maybe in the fall, when there's not so much going around, that maybe they get it from someplace else, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You'd have to examine the propolis.
And what are the healing properties of the propolis itself?
Well, it's antiviral, antibacterial, antifungal, and some of the recent studies have shown that it's anti-cancer as well for prevention. And so you can take it both internally to build your immune system, very, very strong immune system modulator, and also topically for any skin condition. So in skin creams, in salve, you can heal cuts, great scratches, toe fungus, what else? Anything skin-related.
So how does one buy it? Do they usually put it into some wax or a cream, or do they buy it just
Well, propolis is partly wax and resins, of course, but it's a very, very sticky substance. So you can buy the chunks and just chew on them regularly. You know, it's good for your gums as well. Or you can make a tincture out of it. So you can make a 30%, 50%, or 70%, you know, alcohol tincture and take it that way. Or I put it in water. I figured out a formula that, you know, dissolves it in water. And then you would add that to creams or lotions or anything else. Or to beeswax if you're going to make a salve with olive oil, for instance. I have a very simple recipe I could share with people at some point, and they can make their own.
Why don't you tell us right now?
Oh, okay, sure. Okay, so I don't have it in front of me, but if I walk, as we can talk and walk.
Sure.
I'm realizing, because I have it written down, and this is a fail-proof recipe, and you would add more or less beeswax to make it more or less softer, harder. Of course, more beeswax, you'll have a harder salve, so you can make yourself a chapstick. Okay, I have it. All right, so the recipe is... Now, you can have it also, okay, because this makes 36 half-ounce chapsticks or 19 one-ounce pots. So if you cut it in half, I'm just going to give you the whole thing. So it's 16 ounces of olive oil, extra virgin olive oil.
That's 2 cups.
2 cups, that's correct. Or I weigh out, because it's more accurate if you weigh your ingredients, so you can get a little scale. Like a post office scale, and you know, weight on there. So it's 422 grams equals 16 ounces of olive oil. You could also mix up the oils if you want to use part olive oil, part sweet almond, apricot kernel. You can use calendula. You can custom tailor it to whatever you like.
Coconut oil.
Coconut oil, for instance, yes. But remember, with the coconut oil, you're going to use less beeswax, so you have to recalculate the formula. Because it hardens.
Okay.
So I would say just make it like this until you get a hang of it.
Right.
Okay, so it's the 422 grams of olive oil to 169 grams of beeswax, which is 6 ounces. And then you have 1.5 tablespoons of propolis. Now you could use a propolis tincture or you could use a propolis powder.
And how much of that?
1.5 tablespoons. Also, 1.5 tablespoons of honey, raw honey. A half a teaspoon of tea tree oil. Half a teaspoon of lavender essential oil. Half a teaspoon of rosemary essential oil.
That smells good.
You know what? It's really nice. It's natural. It's not overly scented, actually, because it really blends in well. And so this salve will literally heal up everything. If you make it into chapsticks, cold sores, for instance, because of the propolis, will heal right up.
Wow, that's wonderful.
So
Thank you.
Do this in a double boiler, okay? And then when you get the olive oil and the beeswax melted, you have to let it cool down, and the last thing you put in is the essential oil so you don't damage them, and the raw honey. So let cool as long as possible, and then I use a stick blender to blend it all homogeneously. Like one of those sticks.
The double boiler for the olive oil and the beeswax.
Correct.
So you melt that. You put propolis in with that, too?
No, I wait.
Right. The double boiler for the olive oil and the beeswax only.
Correct. And I take it off the heat, let it cool, and then I add the rest of the ingredients with the essential oils last, and then use a stick blender so it's all one homogeneous formula. And then I quickly pour into chapstick tubes or pots. And this works perfect each time. It really does. It's a perfect consistency. If you want a more mushy salve, I would add 5 ounces of beeswax instead of 6. Yeah, I hope people enjoy making it.
Good. And everyone, you can give us feedback, and you can also, if people want to go to your website, what is your website?
It
if
is
want to
B-farm,
send you our email.
Befarm.com. So it's B-E-E-P-H-A-R-M.com.
Great.
As in pharmacy.
Wonderful.
You know, I don't think I have the formula written there, but I will put it up there if people would like to see it.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's great.
So, helping each other.
I have so many questions to ask you, but
okay.
let's take a 2-minute break.
Sure.
And when we come back, I want you to tell us about bee bread. I've had not
oh,
heard
yes,
about that
I can't
either.
Wait. Okay.
Okay, we'll be right back, everybody. Don't go away. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani on IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with my guest, Frederick Keller, acupuncturist and beekeeper out on the east end of Long Island. Frederick, you with me?
Yes, I am.
So what is bee bread? We started to talk about that before the break.
Yes, well, bee bread is what the worker bees put together inside the hive from the pollen that they bring back. Everybody knows about pollen. They bring it back on the backs of their legs, bring it into the hive, then mix it with the raw honey that they've made and mix with a little bit of their saliva and then keep it in those little hex plugs that you see inside a frame of a beehive. And they use that as food to feed their young. So it's nutritionally complete food. They don't separate out the pollen or the honey. This is how they feed their young. Okay, and it is highly, highly nutritious. And most people who are allergic to pollen, let's say, are not allergic to bee bread. And by allergic, I mean have some kind of allergic response on a scale of, you know, mild to severe, which is what most people's allergies are. So if they take bee bread, not only is it nutritionally complete, it's proteins, carbohydrates, lipids, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, the list goes on. This is like nature's superfood and super snack. It's amazing. And I would love everybody to try it. And a lot of the customers, I do the farmers markets on Saturdays and Sundays, and so many of my customers in the last 5 years have finally been turned on to bee bread, and they see what the health benefits are. It's great for GERD, acid reflux, Crohn's disease, diverticulitis, just gives you energy in general. It's truly, truly an amazing product from the beehive. And you
so
can
how do you get that? You take out the bee.
Yes. Well, it's very painstakingly
I would think
tedious
each
to
one
do
of those,
it with
each
long
one of those
tweezers.
Little spots, right, where the bees
right.
plug up is so tiny.
Well, the little hexes, right.
Hexes.
So you'd have to get a long, like, needle-nose tweezers and go in there and pluck them out. It's time-consuming, but also you could just eat the whole piece of the frame, which is beeswax on the outside of it. If you are a beekeeper and, you know, have your own hive, you could do that. But at the same time, when the bees are collecting nectar to bring back to the hive to make the honey, you want to take away their food either. Kind of like collecting pollen. You don't want to collect pollen every day and take away their ability to make bee bread for the young bees. So you have to kind of balance that out. Like in the fall, you could probably get away with just pulling out the bee bread. There probably won't be as much of it since they're not producing that much young bees.
Now, when the hexes are covered over, though, how do you know which one has bee bread in it versus...
Well, the bee bread is very dark and has different colors of the pollen. So it could be yellow, black, orange. It's very, compared to the honey cells, the honey's capped over. Also, it'll be where the brood is, where the babies are, okay? So it's easily accessible to feed the young, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where it would be. It's really unmistakable if you see it inside the hive. And the honey tends to be on the top where they're storing it, and it's very light-colored and that yellow, because the beeswax is so yellow. This is more brownish yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on what the plant sources were, but it is truly an amazing food source, and I wish that all kids could have this for breakfast, in addition to their eggs, and
uh-huh.
this is pure protein.
Mm-hmm.
It's complete protein, so if they had that before they left the house, they'd be good to go for the whole morning.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody wanted to buy bee bread to, you know, just to boost their immune system and help with their own healing process, where would they get that? You have to buy it from a beekeeper?
Well, most beekeepers do not do that here in the United States. It's very popular in Europe and Asia and South America, too. But I can tell you, okay, I have some bee bread, and sometimes I don't have much of it, but I sell it to farmers markets. However, people can make their own, like simulate their own, which is just as good, which I also sell, but you guys can make it yourselves by just getting a jar of raw honey, getting about two-thirds of the same jar of pollen, mixing it together, and letting it ferment for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, turning it over 3 to 5 times a day, and then it's a natural fermentation process that occurs, which makes it so valuable health-wise for the body.
Well, I've been talking, you know, about fermentation, and
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's becoming more and more obvious that that's one of the main things I think missing in our American diet is fermented foods.
Right.
We need to really add those back in.
Yeah, and definitely I encourage everybody to try it out. It's so easy to do. In the summertime, it ferments very quickly here with the humidity. In 2-3 days, it starts to, you could see it bubbling already, and you have to crack the top a couple times a day so it doesn't explode.
Mm-hmm.
In the wintertime, it takes a good 2 weeks, and you just leave it out on your counter and just keep turning it over, and then you have bee bread.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Very
so
cool.
So it's very easy to do, and the health benefits, I think people would really enjoy how they feel
mm-hmm.
if they start incorporating bee bread.
And you would do how much a day?
I would do, you could start off with a quarter teaspoon. I always say start slow.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the way up to a tablespoon and 3 tablespoons a day. I usually like it in the afternoon, like around 3 o'clock when I have my lull in my energy level. I could just take a tablespoon of the bee bread and just dissolve it in water, or you could put it in yogurt or a fruit smoothie, too, and I'm good to go for the rest of the evening.
Wow. Now, I know when you were talking about not heating honey, when
mm-hmm.
you put honey in your tea, are you ruining some of the nutritional value of it?
Well, if you're putting it when the tea is just scalding, when you've just poured it right over your tea leaves, and then you put in your honey, of course, it's going to change the nature of it. So I would say let it cool off for a few minutes first, and then
add the honey.
Yeah, just think gentle, you know, gentle,
right.
Slow,
good idea.
Wait.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And now what is royal jelly? You hear about that a lot.
Yeah, royal jelly, a lot of people know about it because it's in cosmetics for rejuvenation, but internal use of royal jelly I'll tell you first of all what it is. It's what the worker bees produce. There's a gland on top of their heads that produce this white viscous substance. Sometimes it's yellowish. And feed it to the queen bee. That's what differentiates a worker bee from a queen bee. And the queen bee lives 3 to 5, 6 years and lays eggs for that amount of time if she's a good queen bee. The worker bee...
Compared to a worker bee who
lasts 4 weeks.
Right.
Four weeks. They actually work themselves to death, bringing back nectar and working in the hive.
And so they live 5 to 6 years because they're eating this royal jelly?
Because they get fed only royal jelly. It's astounding. So for internal use for humans, it strengthens your bones, your brain, marrow, blood. It's great for, low back pain, knee pain. I would suggest everybody over 40 should take royal jelly. It's good for your complexion. It's good for your hair, your skin, your nails. It helps you sleep at night. If you take 1,500 milligrams to 2,000 per night, you will sleep so much better. And a tablespoon of honey before bed. That's when you should take that.
Because
it's very yin, very nourishing, and you'll have much more peaceful sleep.
And how does that come, royal jelly?
Royal jelly is very difficult to get good quality in this country. I'm trying to encourage when I go to the bee club meetings that somebody start producing royal jelly. And there's a gal in, I believe it's Tucson. I'll have to check that one out. But usually it comes from someplace else. Usually it comes from China and it's contaminated. So there's a company in Brazil, and it's a family-run company. They have royal jelly, and I could post that too if you'd like. It's I'll get you the name and the contact information. There's also a second company, also in Brazil, from the pristine, you know, rainfall forest.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Uniflora, and they have a very good quality royal jelly that is effective.
So you don't make royal jelly?
No, I don't take it out of our own hives. You have to suck it out with a very small straw. It's very painstaking. Also, you're killing the queen bee, so I have a dilemma with that. So it comes from the cells of queen bees. Okay? So when you go in there and you take out the royal jelly, because it takes a while to produce a tiny amount of royal jelly, and then you go in there and, you know, you're killing the queen bee, the potential queen bee. So it's not something I'd really want to do, although I understand the health benefits of royal jelly, you know.
Right. Right.
And there's ethical,
yeah, that is a dilemma.
It is a big dilemma. I don't have a problem eating the drone larva, for instance.
Uh-huh. Right.
But
right.
It's also good for pre- and post-menopausal issues, hot flashes, hormone imbalances. It's amazing. But all of these products are usually taken with another product of the hive. So I wouldn't take like one and not take the other. Because I get asked all the time, well, which one is better? I couldn't say because they all work together. So the raw honey would be the vehicle to take the propolis, to take the honey, to take the pollen, to take the bee bread, to take everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the royal jelly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I have another question. Tell us about bee venom. You know, you hear about bee venom therapy. How does that work?
Wow, yes. Bee venom is the actual venom that comes out of the stinger of the honeybee. And you could either get stung by a bee or else you could also be injected in some pain management specialists. MDs will inject it as it's mixed with saline. I just use a live bee. It's just easier. Also, once again, the venom is not being diluted with a solution and incorporated with lidocaine to stop the pain. So you're diluting the bee venom. It works, but it's not as good as using a live bee. So a lot of people are using it for pain management from osteoarthritis, injuries, scars. It is extremely effective. It's very anti-inflammatory. It contains peptides and enzymes mainly, and it produces an inflammatory response at first because what does a bee sting look like? It's inflamed, red, hot. And then the secondary action is anti-inflammatory. And pain relieving. It really is amazing.
So how do you do that? You actually take a live bee and you put it on someone and make the bee sting them?
Well, the bee stings spontaneously upon contact. So the stinger's in the back of her abdomen. And then I pick a point, according to traditional Chinese medicine and acupuncture, that would be in the protocol for that person's problem. And I let the bee sting in that point. So it's almost
how do you
like
keep the bee from stinging you when you put the bee on them?
Very carefully. It happens. It happens. You just pick her up by the wings or with a tweezer very gently right behind the head, and the stinger just pops right out on contact. And often the stinger doesn't rip out her digestive system, which when she stings you in nature, she bops you if she's defending her hive, and now all her guts come ripping out, and that's when she dies. Okay. Usually when I'm doing bee venom therapy, she can still fly around for days because the stinger just comes out very gently.
Mm-hmm.
And I get asked, oh, yeah, I'm killing bees and all that. What most people don't realize is when you're collecting honey, taking the frames out of the beehive in order to extract the honey, you're inadvertently crushing bees. Not intentionally, but it does happen. So you're really killing more bees doing that than you are doing bee venom therapy.
Mm-hmm. And how many stings do you usually give somebody to?
It depends on what they have. For something more acute, like an injury or, let's say, low back pain or knee pain, and it also depends on the person. So it can go anywhere from one sting up to 10, 12 stings per session, per person. Some people have gotten more.
Oh, my gosh.
But
well, maybe just say the stings hurt so much that then they don't feel their back pain.
Well, that's interesting. But no, the sting hurts only for about 20 seconds.
Uh-huh.
It's really no worse. And actually, it feels better than getting a cortisone injection.
And I've heard lots of people using it for arthritis. Is that
for
true?
Arthritis, yes, especially osteoarthritis. That's really well managed with bee venom therapy. For things like multiple sclerosis and rheumatoid arthritis, that would take way more time, like 6 months plus of stinging 2 to 3 times a week. to see stable results.
But it really can help that as well.
It can, definitely about the quality of life for that person. And again, it depends on how they are manifesting it in their lives also.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so some people are more severe, other people are not. And also the quality of the food you're eating, the exercise you're getting, that's all part of it. It's
mm-hmm.
It's not a quick fix, in other words.
Right.
I mean, it can feel like it's quick, but it's not.
Right.
Yeah.
During our break, I looked up where that study had come out.
Italy,
of,
right?
I was talking about Italy, right, the neocannabinoids. Now, how are they affecting the bees here? I mean, do you believe that the neocannabinoids are connected to the...
I definitely think so. People are still spraying and using the chemicals. And I had somebody at the market say something to me this summer, which just really kind of like hit me hard. They said, well, if they didn't spray for mosquitoes, how would I be able to enjoy my barbecue outside on my porch? I'd rather them spray for mosquitoes. I was astounded at the lack of insight.
Mm-hmm.
And a connection made between all of that. And I thought, wow, I think that's a popular idea.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Let me be comfortable. Who cares?
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, that attracted beekeeping for my husband and I, you know, when we were deciding last year, did we want to do chickens or bees, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, take on for this year. And bees seemed like it was going to be, you know, it was a lot less work. The bees kind of take care of themselves, and the chickens, even though I know a lot of people do chickens, you know, I just didn't think I could stomach the issue of, you know, a fox getting them or dealing with coming home to
that
chicken parts all over. So we went with the bees, and yet it's ended up being much more work than I actually thought. And people have said to us it's partly because of the bees' immune systems now are so much more compromised.
Being affected by the chemicals.
Right, from all the
bees. And just think what it's doing to us as well, because what's happening to the bees is happening to us.
Right, right. And so, it's not just one thing. You know, you can't just isolate one thing. It's the combination of all things together. If it was only pesticides or only GMOs or only herbicides. But when you do all these things together, the same way it's wreaking havoc to their immune system, that's what's happening to our immune system.
Exactly, exactly. We have a lot to learn from the bees because they'll go first because they're an insect. But I don't know, sometimes I really think that they're more resilient than we think.
Uh-huh.
I really, maybe that's just an idealistic point of view, but they've existed for centuries. I know now it's being pretty revved up about what the human beings are doing to destroy our, you know, ecosystem and food supply and all that, and the bees are reflecting that and what's happening with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I really still have faith. I really do.
I do, too.
I really do.
So what do you do to winterize your bees? Is there anything special that you recommend to do to a beehive?
Last year, we didn't wrap them up. Sometimes we wrap them up like with burlap and reduce the entrance, of course, and pretty much let them be, so to speak, and they do their own thing.
Uh-huh, and they take care of themselves.
They take care of themselves. You leave them food. A lot of people ask me about the feeding, and some people will feed. I've been asked if I feed corn syrup. Of course not. You don't feed bees corn syrup.
We've been giving ours organic sugar water.
Right, because let's face it, if you don't feed them in the wintertime, come January when there's a nice warm day, the bees go out and forage immediately when they feel that warmth, and there's nothing to eat. There'll be nothing to eat maybe before beginning of March at the earliest around here. So
do you feed them throughout the winter or just once at the beginning?
Well, you can feed them throughout. I would check on them every, you know, 2-3 weeks to make sure that, you know, they're okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean,
okay.
I mean, people are feeding them now, actually, too, because there's really nothing much out there. But by the time they make the honey, which will be by next June when you start extracting again, July usually, none of that sugar water is in the hive.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are concerned, well, you fed them sugar, but now what's happening to my honey? Well, nothing's happening to the honey because it's not even in the hive by then.
Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't actually taken any honey out yet because we want them to go into the winter with the honey.
Right.
It's our first year with them. Let them be. As you said, let them be.
Let them be.
Right. Well, Frederick, thank you so much for joining me on the show. Your knowledge about bees and bees.
Thank you for inviting me. There's
just
so much more, too. You have no idea.
Oh, yes, I do. I do have
an
idea. But I will have you on again because there's
thank
so
you.
Much, I think, that people want to know about bees and the magic that about bees. So
yes,
thank
we definitely
you so
have
much.
To share with each other and just you know, support each other in doing the best we can and keeping our food whole and slow, you know,
that's
as you
right.
say.
That's right.
Yeah.
So thank you, and everybody out there, have a great rest of the week. And if you want to check out Frederick's website, tell everybody your website one more time.
It's beefarm.com, B-E-E, as a B, P-H-A-R-M, like pharmacy, so beefarm.com. And I'll try to post that by tonight, the recipe, okay, for you guys.
Great. Thank you. And everyone, you can check out my website at ieatgreen.com, and you'll find a link to this show as well. So everyone, have a great rest of the week, and I'll be with you again next week. Bye for now.
Thank you.